You're listening to Seeking Office, the Vancouver Municipal Election Podcast. A quick note, this episode was originally broadcast on June 28th as part of Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. Democracy Watch, like Seeking Office, is created by CITR's News Collective. You can hear live broadcasts of undercovered current affairs across the Lower Mainland every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Democracy Watch. Just tune into 101.9 FM or stream live at citr.ca. Hello, I'm Alex DeBoer, CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator and member of CITR's News Collective. So, we have a municipal election that's just over 3 months away. In an effort to make this election fairer, both for candidates and voters, Councillor Andrea Reimer introduced a motion to randomize the ballot order. This motion passed in council on June 6th. What that means is that instead of candidates appearing on the ballot in alphabetical order, according to last name, so A, B, C, D, E, and so on, the order of candidates will now be random. Since this motion passed, general perception has been quite favorable. Those who think it won't make a difference also seem to agree that it couldn't hurt. But is that true? In a recent article in the New Spirit titled, Should Ballot Order Be Randomized in Vancouver?, co-authors Jack Lucas and Charles Tessier use a new database of election results from cities across Western Canada to examine the effects of alphabetic ballot ordering, or what is known as the Aardvark advantage. In theory, the problem with the Aardvark advantage is that voters will simply scan the list of names and choose the first names they recognize as they move down the list from top to bottom. And this issue can become exacerbated with a complicated ballot with, say, 50 or 40 people to vote for, such as will be the case in the upcoming Vancouver municipal election. Authors Lucas and Tessier have, however, disputed this understanding of the Aardvark advantage as being overly simplistic. In their analysis, they found the Aardvark advantage gives a small advantage only in cases where candidates' party affiliations aren't clearly labeled. This is key. It means that the Aardvark advantage is much more pronounced in elections that involve nonpartisanship, low-profile races, or low amounts of information for voters. Essentially, in elections where voters don't know the candidates and don't know which party they belong to, or if they do, they don't know what that party stands for, the Aardvark advantage will be in effect. Even in those cases, the advantage is only around 2-4%, so it's still quite small. What Lucas and Tessier warn is that implementing a randomized ballot system will simply replace one unfair system with another. They argue that instead of the Aardvark advantage, now a random selection of names that get placed at the top of the ballot order will be given a slight advantage. To prevent this, they make two recommendations. One, to implement a rotating ballot system, and two, and most importantly, to provide voters with all the information they need to make an informed decision. I reached out to one of these authors in Calgary, Jack Lucas. Lucas is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science and the director of the Urban Policy Program at the School of Public Policy at the University of Calgary. Here's the interview. First off, Vancouver has, up till this June, with the passing of Andrea Reimer's motion to randomize the ballot order, had an alphabetical ordering system. And this system has been criticized because of a phenomenon called the Aardvark advantage, which you talk about in your article. I'm wondering if you can just explain what that is.
Sure. So the phenomenon that we call the Aardvark advantage in this article is the advantage that people get from their position at the top of the ballot. And if you imagine a voter in Vancouver, to try and understand how this Aardvark advantage might emerge, you can imagine a voter who goes to the polls, has to select 10 city council candidates from a list of 30 or 40 or even 50 names, And so they start at the top of the ballot, and they start to work their way down through the list. And as they go, they select the names that they recognize and remember that they want to vote for. And if you don't have very much information for voters on the ballot to help them remember who's who, it can sometimes be the case that as they go through the list, they'll mistakenly vote for somebody at the top of the ballot, someone they recognize, and they will have exhausted their votes or the votes they want to cast by the time they get to the bottom. And so what that means is people who are at the top, because people tend to work through the list from top to bottom, might have an unfair advantage. So that's what we call the aardvark advantage, simply because if the ballot is ordered alphabetically, then if your last name happens to be aardvark, then you're in the lucky situation of almost always being at the very top of the list.
Right, right. And so with this reform to randomize the ballot order so that it's no longer based on an alphabetical order, it seems like the public has reacted favorably and sort of acknowledges that this aardvark advantage is real. But in your article, you explain that this advantage carries real caveats, and I'm wondering if you can explain what those are.
Sure. So there's two sides of the question when you're thinking about whether a ballot order should change. You can think about whether the aardvark advantage is a real problem. That's the one thing. And then you can think about what are the consequences going to be of randomizing the order of the names. So in terms of the consequences of randomizing the order of the names, the conversation in Vancouver, as far as I've followed it, has generally suggested that this is a pretty harmless reform. That if there's any chance that the aardvark advantage is real, we may as well randomize the order of the ballot, and it's not going to do any harm, and it might help the problem. But it is worth remembering that a randomly ordered list of 40 or 50 names does create some problems of its own, the most obvious of which is that it's kind of confusing. If you have 10 people you want to vote for and you have them in mind and you can find them on a alphabetically ordered list, that's pretty easy to do. Not necessarily very easy, but it's easy enough. When you have to find those names amidst others in a random order, it's a little bit harder. And so actually, if there is this phenomenon of people going down the ballot from top to bottom and voting for names as they go, our expectation is that you're going to see it be more pronounced with a randomly ordered ballot than you would for an alphabetically ordered ballot, just because of the increased difficulty involved in finding the 10 people you want to vote for on that big, long list.
Right. Okay, so with a randomly ordered ballot, it actually makes the problem worse.
That's right. Our expectation is that to the extent that the name order problem is a problem, it's going to be more pronounced with a random ballot than an alphabetical ballot.
Right. So another component of the aardvark advantage is that it may discourage people with names low on the alphabet from even running for office, which I thought was really interesting, and I hadn't considered that. And I know this is something Andrea Reimer has emphasized. And you do have a graph in your article that shows that there is evidence that this aardvark advantage arms race, as you call it, has happened in Vancouver over the years, but that the phenomenon is mostly linked to nonpartisan candidates. So can you tell me why that is?
Right. So what we found was that, as you say, the people, we do see more candidates with last names early in the alphabet today than we did in Vancouver in the 1940s or 1950s. Mm-hmm. And the obvious reason you might think that that would happen is that the parties are getting wise to this aardvark advantage effect, and they're trying to run candidates with these early in the alphabet names. But what we found when we look at the data is that actually this whole change over time, which is pretty modest overall, but that change is driven almost exclusively by independent candidates. So Why is this? We don't know. I can speculate that if there is some sort of scare-off effect of this alphabetical advantage, if people think, well, my name is Mr. Zorn, and so there's no chance I'm going to get elected anyway, so I may as well not bother, perhaps you would see that more among independent candidates than candidates who are being recruited by political parties and encouraged to run. But honestly, I don't know, and I think it'll require a little bit more in-depth investigation to figure out who these independent candidates are and why we've seen this change over time. But that does seem to be the key driver of the change. And like I say, it's pretty modest overall anyway.
Right, right. But the theory is that perhaps it's because parties are choosing people whose names are higher on the alphabet because of this perceived or real phenomenon.
That would be our first theory, but we right. don't see that really borne out in the evidence. One thing I can say is that the NPA in its earlier years does seem to have been pretty good at choosing candidates with early in the alphabet names. Mm-hmm. You have to dig into that further to know if it's really a fluke or if there's something really going on there. If you look at the Vancouver historians of Vancouver politics have often pointed out that it did seem that the NPA was choosing candidates in the early years who had these early in the alphabet names, but that seems to have, in general, that seems to have evened out over time. So since the 1970s, we're not able to pick up any clear evidence that the parties are getting hip to the aardvark advantage and changing their strategy as a result.
Right, right. And you also point out that, like, in the 70s, what was the rule they changed? I have it here. That you had to add party labels to the candidates' names. And there was also coincided with the reemergence of a competitive party system in the city.
Yeah, this, I think, is actually the most important finding in our little report, mm-hmm. which is that since the mid-1970s, there's essentially no evidence for the aardvark advantage in Vancouver. So prior to the 1970s, we see really clear evidence that people at the top of the ballot did have an advantage over people who were lower down on the ballot. And that seems to have established a line of thinking in Vancouver that this was a real problem. Mm-hmm. Because at one point in the city's history, it was a real problem. But since the 1970s, that problem has, as far as we can tell, basically disappeared. And the reason for that is because of two factors, we think. One is that in the late 1960s and early 1970s, the party system in Vancouver had reinvigorated. You had the party called Team and COPE, and those were the initial competitors to NPA, and then subsequently we see the emergence of Vision Vancouver and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that has given voters really important clues about who they might want to support on a ballot of 40 or 50 names. The second thing, which is also important and closely linked to this, is that on ballots today in Vancouver, the party label of each candidate is actually printed next to the name on the ballot itself. So unlike prior to 1974, when you had to actually memorize the names of the party candidates you wanted to vote for, if you wanted to vote for party candidates, now you can just go into the voting station and say, look, I want to vote for NPA candidates or Vision Vancouver candidates. I'm just going to go down the list and vote for those candidates. And you don't necessarily need to know as much about each of the specific names. So that information is really vital. We know it's vital from other levels of government for voters and for giving the voters the information they need to make their choices. And it seems like once that information was available to voters in Vancouver, the aardvark advantage essentially disappears.
Right. So it sounds like you're saying that, you know, once candidates are grouped into parties that stand for something, people can more easily identify who they want to vote for based on those party beliefs rather than the individual candidates who may have more complex individual platforms.
Exactly. If you know which party you want to vote for and you're able to identify the candidates for that party on the ballot itself, you're just in much better shape for being able to cast a complex ballot in a way that you're comfortable with.
Right. Another thing I thought was really interesting in your article is that Vancouver experimented with randomized ballots in 1993. Can you tell me about that and why that initiative didn't stick?
Yeah, this is a little forgotten tidbit in the history of Vancouver, and I didn't see it discussed very much during this recent debate about randomization. But in 1993, almost exactly the same thing happened as we've seen happen this year. Concerns grew about the alphabetical order advantage, and As a result, the ballot was randomized, and subsequent to the election, there were complaints about that randomly ordered ballot being confusing and difficult to work with, and so the ballot was changed back to alphabetical order. But I don't know that much about the details of how that change happened. There's really very little reporting on it in the newspapers of the day. I haven't been able to find much by way of archival materials related to that event. So it's a bit of a historical tidbit, but it would be worth exploring given that this recent change is happening in Vancouver again. It'd be nice to know a little more about the experience in 1993.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've listed how, or you've explained how the randomized ballot sort of creates a new set of advantages in replacing the alphabetized system. And your recommendation is that instead, or in addition to the randomized ballot, Vancouver adopt a rotating ballot system. Can you tell me a bit about what that is?
Sure. So if you think about the way the randomized ballot's going to work in Vancouver, it'll be the order of the names will be drawn from a hat, and or from a box or from something randomly, mm-hmm. and you'll get an overall name order based on who gets pulled from the hat. And that will then be the order of the names on the ballot for the entire city. So no matter where you go to vote in the city, you'll grab your ballot, and that will be the order of the names. And the effect of that, as we say in the report, is that really you're just picking a different set of winners, right? If the ballot order advantage is a real thing, then instead of being a winner because your last name is Aardvark, you're a winner because your last name happened to be the first one that was drawn from the hat. So the way to get around this is to have a different order of names at each polling station across the city. It's also possible to have a different order of names on every single ballot, but that gets a little complicated. They do it that way in Calgary. But in a number of American cities, they just divide up the order by polling station. Each polling station has a different order. So if my name is at the top of the ballot in one polling station, then at the polling station down the road, I might be in the middle of the ballot. And so everybody kind of gets their turn at the top of the ballot, and you even out whatever advantages might exist for the top of the ballot candidate. Those get evened out because you're never at the top of the ballot in more than one polling station.
Right. That makes sense. And that's not something that the city has in the works, though.
No, this was discussed, and I believe that Councillor Reimer mentioned it as something that she would favor, but the Vancouver City Charter appears to only allow for either an alphabetical ballot or a randomized ballot with the same order across the city. So my understanding is that it would require a change to the city charter to actually allow for something like this, which is why it's pretty unlikely to happen before the fall election.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why the city charter won't allow this?
No, the option to introduce a randomized ballot was put into the city charter a long time ago, and I'm not really sure why it was introduced, and there's probably not that many people around who remember, but at the time, I believe the city of Vancouver wanted to have the option. Perhaps it was before the 1993 reform, and subsequent to that, this system of rotating ballots has really become more prominent, and so it probably just wasn't on the radar at the time quite the same way that it is today.
Right. With the need for voters to have all the information about all the candidates and all the parties in order to make an informed decision, which you outline as being the major way to have a fair election, rather than like whether the ballot is alphabetized or randomized or whatever system is used. And you suggest that the major forces that can spread information to people who are voting are the media, the political parties, and the election administrators. And it seems to me the major force among those three is the media. And I was just wondering if you wanted to comment on whether you think Vancouver's media is robust enough to provide voters with the information they need to make informed decisions when casting their ballots, especially in an election with 40 or 50 names that may be especially confusing.
Well, I'm currently a resident of the city of Calgary, and so I feel somewhat presumptuous commenting on the state of Vancouver's media system. But I would say that it is possible, even in spite of the complexity of the ballot, given the party system, there are opportunities for Vancouver media to cover the election in a way that's really useful for voters, really by focusing on those parties, and then also focusing on independent candidates who look to be competitive. You know, in the mayoral race, it looks like there's going to be a quite competitive independent candidate who's not running under any party label, Kennedy Stewart. And
yep.
There will need to be a lot of coverage of Kennedy Stewart's position to kind of match the coverage that'll go on of NPA and Vision Vancouver and so forth. There are ways that, in addition to the media, that these other actors can do more or less work to inform the electorate. In our most recent election in Calgary, for example, the city election office made little two-minute videos of every single candidate in the city. Any candidate who wanted to participate was free to participate. It was exactly the same image of every candidate, kind of leveled the playing field as far as image quality and production quality and all of those things go. And every candidate had an opportunity to stand in front of this camera and speak for 2 minutes about their vision for the city. And my understanding from talking to the election officials after the election is that those videos were viewed a lot. And so there are opportunities like that for city election administrators to get involved in a way that's totally neutral and not politicized at all, and help to inform voters about the options that they have. But I do agree with you that the key actor here is the media, and we all of us, political scientists, media, everybody else, can get caught up in the horse race of it all sometimes, and that's all perfectly legitimate and justifiable, but it's nice when it is accompanied by clear information for voters about what the candidates stand for and who they claim to represent, and that those kinds of bits of information help voters make up their minds about who they want to choose and reduce the chance that they're going to go into the voting station and accidentally make a choice for somebody at the top of the ballot who they didn't actually intend to vote for.
This episode was edited and produced by Alex DeBoer. Special thanks to Jack Lucas and the entire team at the News Collective. Thanks for listening. Seeking Office is brought to you by CITR's News Collective and produced by Alex DeBoer. Our theme music is by Artem Bemba. Thank you for listening.